Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. Oh, but sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told you to pray. They built you a temple and locked you away. Oh, but they never told you the price that you pay. The things that you might have done. Only the good die.
Hi everyone, this is Dr. Michael Wald, and you're listening to Ask the Blood Detective. Today's show topic I've entitled Health Confidence. Now, for those of you that have been with me since the beginning of my shows or have listened to some shows, know that I do quite a thorough job, or at least I try, of exploring different perspectives on different topics, whether it's the truth about acid-base balance or pH in the body, or what is true and not true regarding various detoxification methods. I've had a show entitled Vitamin Lies, where I distinguish between what expectations are true in the area of nutrition and what supplementation has the potential to work, and some common misunderstandings I've heard over my 26 years of doing clinical nutrition. And the point of today's show, though, is something a bit different. It takes several steps back in my mind in the sense that our confidence regarding our health or our confidence regarding what we feel is possible with our health is predetermined by information, how we internalize that information and assess that information, and finally, how we practically apply it. Now, I'm going to be extremely frank during this show, and I try to be on every show, but I say this outright because you may not like everything that I say today. I'm just a human being, just like every one of you, and what I've seen over the last more than just my career of 26 years, as I just mentioned, but my father before me, who was a natural health care provider, and the stories that he shared with me as I was a young kid, 10 years old, 12 years old, just wanting to follow my dad around, who was a nutritionist and he was a chiropractor, and his patients would say to me, "Mikey, little Mikey," that was me, "your dad, he's the best. I had been everywhere else, and I had tried this or that." We've all heard the stories, but it wasn't until I saw your dad, Dr. George Wald, that I got healthy. I listened to what my medical physician said, and I did what they tried, and it only made me worse, or it didn't help me all the way, and they undermined my feelings about nutrition, etc., etc. But when I met your dad, things were different. So it was impressed upon me at a very young age that there was more than one way of doing things. I had an uncle who was a pathologist, and I spoke to him when I was a young teenager, when I was thinking about what I would do with my life. And when I spoke with him on the phone, I'll never forget the conversation. He was very monotone. There was no excitement in his voice. He was doing what he was doing because he was good in math and science in high school, and then he did his pre-meds. And I don't mean to knock his choices or any medical physician's choices at all, but it simply didn't have, for me, the excitement that I felt from my father's work. I remember once a patient of my father's calling the house phone, and I picked it up, and I couldn't have been more than maybe 15, and the patient asked me a question, and I started to rattle off responses to all these nutrition questions they were asking. And at the end of the conversation, which I think lasted about a half an hour, they said, "So are you graduating soon?" And I said, "I'm just 15. I remember the silence on the end of the phone. The point of this story is that I developed a certain health confidence. That's the topic of today's show, because it was inbred in me. I think naturally, I'd like to think that I was born with a natural holistic mindedness, I like to call it, but I think it was my father mostly, and of course my mom, who is super supportive, and we just lived very naturally oriented lives. So a little bit of a background story here. So I went to chiropractic college and I couldn't wait to go. I remember reading my father's textbooks when I was very young and I couldn't get enough of them. I would tear out the pages, put them in my back pocket. There wasn't a moment, any spare moment, wherever I was, that I did not always think about pulling those pages out of my pocket and reading them. So I was not just thirsty for natural health and nutrition and biochemistry and the structure of the body and how the digestive nervous system and immune system worked. I would go through my dad's books, but I couldn't imagine my life without following through on that. But I gave it a fair shot. I talked to my uncle and I was very quickly convinced that maybe I didn't give it a chance. Maybe I heard what I wanted to hear, that chiropractic was for me. And then when I went to chiropractic college, I noticed that most of us in chiropractic college had some life-changing experience with either natural medicine or chiropractic. I suffered from very severe migraines at one point when I was very small. And my father put his gentle hands on my cervical spine and my neck area, and he adjusted me, and he had me take certain nutrients and eat a certain way and think a certain way. And my migraines virtually disappeared. So I had real evidence in my life, real proof, real life experience of what natural medicine can do. And then when I was 18, I had done some very heavy running. I was a runner. And then one day I went from perfect health, super fast, very confident with my health, to having multiple sclerosis. I could not see out of my right eye. I had what's called optic neuritis, which is a very early sign of, or a first sign, very commonly, not always, of MS. And I was in high school, and I was taking a college-level biology class. I was in that class, and I was the teacher's pet, so to speak, because I was super enthusiastic. I just loved biology. My father was also a biology teacher. And the professor said, "Michael, tell us what you see through the microscope." So I looked in the scope, and I saw nothing. I thought maybe he was just joking, so I said, "Nothing." And he said, "Okay, Michael, tell me what you see in the scope, and let's get on with this." So I looked again, still thinking he was joking, saw nothing, so I said, "Not a thing." His face completely changed, his jaw dropped, and his face became absolutely white. I'll never forget it. He came over to me, looked through the scope, and he saw what was on the slide that I did not see because I had blind spots in my eye. I couldn't see it. So, long story short, my father did what he did nutritionally, put me on an entire protocol. The protocol I still have in a book of his that he wrote in his handwriting in the back of the book, in a chapter on multiple sclerosis and then his additional notes. And I just followed what he told me to do. It never occurred to me not to listen to my dad because he was my idol. He still is, although he's gone. And now, the date that I am pre-taping this particular show, which is February 9th, 2017, I'm 51 years old. I have, other than an ankle issue, I am perfectly healthy. I have run 3 marathons, many triathlons, even more races, and lift weights, and I did martial arts for several years. I wrestled with my son. So I have no physical limitations and a very strong sense of health confidence because of personal experience. So I ask you this question. For those people who I've seen, and I will see, and many of you out there, when you go to your regular allopathic doctors, the traditional docs, when you get frustrated with them because you mention your thoughts or ask questions about, "Well, doc, what do you think about this diet? What about these supplements? What do you think about magnets or acupuncture or chiropractic or these nutrients or these foods for a detox or what have you?" And they look at you as if you are a deer in the headlights, as if you have two heads. Should we really expect these traditionally trained allopathic doctors who have a valid experience of health and perspective, just like I just explained to you that I grew up in, could we realistically expect that they would react any other way? So some of you are saying, sure, it's their jobs to do that. Many of you have said to me, well, yeah, I understand that they don't really get it. It's not their fault. They're so, so busy. And I sometimes say to the patient that says that to me, I'll say, well, if I don't know something, I look it up immediately. If I don't know something, I say, I really don't know. I'm not trained in that. But why don't you contact me tomorrow or next week, whatever time frame I think I need to really learn the topic. You know, more than a decade ago, easily, Gary Noel gave me a call and he said, Michael, I would like to do a show on hepatitis C. Would you like to do that show and the nutritional approaches? I said, absolutely. He says, okay, we're going to start the show in a minute. I said, hold. I said, Gary, hold on a second. First of all, I'm with patients. Secondly, and between you and me, I didn't say this to Gary at the time. I'm talking to the audience here now. I could write on a half of a page what I knew about hepatitis C at the time. So what did I do? I said, Gary, I would love to do this. Can I do next week's show? And he says, absolutely. And he hung up because he really wanted me to do that show. So what did I do? I read nothing but books and did research on the nutritional approaches to hepatitis C. In a single week, I wrote Natural Approaches to Hepatitis C, which is one of the first books I published. I wrote a book so I can have about a 20-minute interview spot on Gary Noel's show. The point I'm trying to make is that my health confidence, again, the title of the show, Your Health Confidence, is born out of your entire life and how you filter all the information you hear. So when your doctors, your regular allopathic doctors, untrained in nutrition, with no exposure to natural health, for example, and what you know, do not understand what you are talking about, cannot even get a grip or a concept of it because they just are not, they have no relatedness to it. How could we expect that they would not know? But I do expect one thing. I do believe, I take a stand that any type of healthcare provider, also including natural healthcare providers, whether they're chiropractors or acupuncturists or holistic nurses or nutritional consultants or clinical nutritionists, whatever the type of natural healthcare provider, they should not, I believe, speak adversely about the medical perspective, because when I used to do that, when I was first in practice, there were times where I was like, oh, no, medicine, drugs, never, never. It's just toxic. You don't do it ever. I've matured since then because I realized one day that what I do is not for me. It is for you. It is for others. So who am I to limit what is possible and what is available to people who seek me out, people who bestow upon me the privilege of taking care of their health so they can enjoy this life, this wonderful life that we have. So I take it very, very seriously. I will not stop studying, learning, and knowing when I am being narrow-minded and acknowledging consciously, oh, well, you know, that person just asked me about magnets, and the first thought where my brain went was, oh boy, what a waste. But then I slow myself down and say, wait a second. And when I first heard about magnets, for example, it's just an example, folks, years ago, I didn't know anything about it. So that was my reaction. That's normal. What I give myself some credit for is that I was able to step outside of myself and realize I don't know what I'm talking about. So I studied it. And then I said, wow, there's something to this. Now, maybe if I studied it, I felt there wasn't something to it, then I would say that. So when I speak to a patient, I say, listen, let me give you two responses. Here's what my feelings are. And then here's what the evidence says. So, you know, you choose. I want to digress for a minute. When we're talking about health confidence, your health confidence, what I mean is your ability to take in information, whether it's from allopathic medicine or alternative, quote unquote, alternative medicine. I like to use the term integrative health care because, again, I don't want to limit what may or may not be the right choice for someone else. If you, as the listener, if you, as the patient, as the individual, if you choose and you take a stand, I do not ever want medication. I would never get chemo. That is fine. I respect that. I might even agree with it. But I'm obligated to give all perspectives. So I went to chiropractic college, which I stated earlier. I learned a lot of natural health and nutrition in chiropractic college. It was everything I thought it would be. And the majority of students in chiropractic college, as I said, had some life-altering experience from chiropractic. When I then, after chiropractic, I earned my master's degree in nutrition from the University of Bridgeport. I sat in the classes for 2 years. And I also taught the online master's course, lab nutrition course, after I graduated. I said, you know, I realized I had a lot of education in the natural world, but I felt a bit imbalanced. I wanted to learn more perspectives because one day, maybe I'm a little slow, folks, one day I realized that the perspective I had in natural medicine is a perspective. It is a truth, so to speak, but it's not the truth because there might just be many truths. There may just be an unlimited number of possible truths. I can't possibly maybe explore all of them, but I certainly try and tried. Chiropractic school, I got my master's. Then I said, you know, I think I need to go to medical school. So I did. And I sat in classrooms and I did my work and I did my medical rotations. I did them all in the United States. I did OB. I did child psychiatry in Westchester. I did adult psychiatry. I did radiology in Westchester. I did OB in Connecticut. I many other forms of rotations required of me between roughly 8 and 12 or 16 weeks in each one, gastroenterology, internal medicine, all of that. And I made a decision. I said, you know, I could do this. I could do this I could do this allopathic medicine. I was fascinated working in hospitals in all these different areas. And I realized, you know, am I willing to give up? I looked at it like a giving up, I admit. 3, 5, 6 years of my life to become a licensed medical doctor when there are so many others that can do this hospital thing that just doesn't turn me on. It's not creative enough for me. I wanted to help people and help them prevent illness so they didn't have to end up in hospitals. So I appreciated the education. I respect the medical profession very, very much. But I did the medical education for exposure so I could fairly say to someone, yeah, I've been there, done that. Yep, I've done colonoscopies. I was required to do those. And I know what is available in traditional medicine. But I choose. My healthcare confidence is in natural medicine. So then I became a sports certified nutritionist and I got all these other certifications, not because I wanted to pile up a bunch of certifications. I'm just hungry and was hungry. And I'm hungrier today than ever at age 51 for more knowledge. I get better and better all the time. And that is the opportunity that each of us has if we maintain an open-mindedness. I was sitting with a patient once in my office. And she was crying, and she was so, so disappointed that her doctors just did not support her views on nutrition. They just didn't understand her perspective. They were undermining her. They would yell at her. She would go to different doctors. As soon as she mentioned these viewpoints, they treated her differently in her perspective. And I interrupted her sobbing, and I said, let's just call her Judy for a moment. That wasn't her name. I said, Judy, I understand where you're coming from. You have every right to be upset. And I meant this. But do you really think, Judy, that it's fair that you would expect an allopathic doctor to be open-minded to the topics and the concepts and the practical applications of nutritional and natural medicine when they have virtually no training or exposure or perspective in the area? And she really listened to those words, and somehow they got through to her, and her face once again just changed. And she says, huh, she says, you're right, I guess it's unfair. And she had carried this frustration around with her for years, like lots of people do that I see. It does nothing but make you sicker. Let it go. She let it go. We were able to do good work. And then she also, on occasion, needed certain things through medicine. Maybe it was a routine colonoscopy or whatever it was. And rather than being petrified at the thought of just surrendering to medicine, she chose it. Quite honestly, I, with all my years of running, I just recently have caused a tear in addition to some plantar fasciitis of my foot. So I did everything I could do naturally that I could think of. And some of you are thinking of things that maybe I should try, but I'm promising I probably did them. And I need a 60-minute procedure on the bottom of my foot. I will be in a boot for about 6 to 8 weeks. Now, I bring this story up because over my 26 years of doing this sort of work, this integrated, much more of a naturally based biased work, I admit it's a bias. That's okay. It's not a bad word, I don't think. That I'm able to surrender to what medicine has to offer. I think that health confidence comes from not just educating ourselves and gathering knowledge, but the knowledge you take out of a book or listening to a radio show or a convention, or wherever you get it from other people, as you place it in your brains, as it goes through your filter, I would suggest open your filter to all possibilities. Sometimes, often, I have learned things in medicine. For example, here's something practical. We've all, or many of us, have heard of SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Of course, I learned this in medical school, and I had a very, very good physician, chief of internal medicine and gastroenterology in a hospital in New Jersey. And he said, yes, well, for SIBO, what we do is we flood the intestinal tract with antibiotics, and we kill as much of that as we can, and the patient usually feels somewhat better. When I asked, you know, how long does that last, and is it permanent, does it fix the problem, he didn't even understand why I was asking questions. He says, this is the procedure. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this is because of my exposure to the traditional method, it occurred to me that rather than flooding the intestinal tract with antibiotics when someone has SIBO or any other type of infection, why don't I flood them with healthy, natural probiotics? Maybe that'll cause as I think about it in my mind's eye, as a visual snowstorm of healthy bugs that just pushes all the bad stuff out. Lo and behold, I tried it. For many people, it was all they needed. And many other people, I recognize that the bacterial overgrowth, the bad bugs of SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, were not the cause of themselves. They didn't just miraculously appear in the gut of this individual, the bad bugs. It was because the terrain was toxic, the environment of the bowel, which of course is connected to everything else. Herein lies the problem. This is not a criticism. Well, maybe it is. I think it's a truth. I know this because when I went to medical school, and most of us know that the medical education is very compartmentalized because it's hard. There are courses on gastroenterology, endocrinology, infectious disease, immunology, gynecology, family practice, internal medicine, pathology. There are gastroenterology. I mean, the list goes on. And the courses are divided as sort of separate things. The problem with this, which undermines all of our health confidence, if we are not aware of this, is that the structure of the medical education, not unlike the structure of some natural healthcare programs too, is to enable the student to learn. When a medical student, for example, goes through all of these compartmentalized courses, he or she is well trained over the course of, on average, about 7 years in this way of thinking. That is a form of brainwashing. Now, I don't use that term necessarily in an adverse way, but it's a conditioned way of thinking that is reinforced over years and years and years and years and years. So, of course, they're going to think a certain way when they hear something other than what they've ever learned, like something natural. Of course, I'm also generalizing. There are many allopathic physicians that are open-minded, although I don't think open-mindedness is enough. If you're open-minded, I have a lot of patients that say to me, yeah, my doctor's very open-minded. He or she doesn't, you know, make any suggestions in natural medicine, but they're open-minded, and they feel good about that. The patient does. And I think to myself, well, that's great. But I would like to see that physician go a little further by saying, yeah, I'm open-minded, so why don't you go actually see someone who knows that? But oftentimes that does not happen. So the medical student gets out of school eventually and is a licensed physician. And they may not see these connections that are just so obvious to so many of us listening to this show right now. What I mean is, go back to the SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth example. How can, I would say, let me put on the integrated, holistic-mindedness hat for a moment and look at the same SIBO person. Imagine this. You are the SIBO person. You have a gut issue. On the right side of you, I'm standing there. On the left side of you is one of your regular doctors. And if you say, doctor, Mr. Allopathic doctor, how would you deal with this? Well, it's quite easy. We would do a hydrogen breath test, and I would check for whether or not you produce a certain outgas product, which confirms for me the diagnosis of SIBO. And then I would give you a broad spectrum antibiotic for quite a long time, depending on your response. And that's how I would treat it. Now, if you now glanced over to me and asked the same question, now again, I'm not necessarily saying which is right or wrong. I'm just letting you know the difference of perspective, that if we're not aware of it, we will not understand this difference of perspective. And that undermines our knowledge, our application of our health efforts, and ultimately our health confidence. If you would then ask me how to treat it, I would say, well, the thing about SIBO is we know it's an overgrowth of bacteria. So there must be some leakiness and some distortion of how your intestinal tract works, particularly your small intestine. We also know that you probably might have some immune compromise, either as a partial or full cause of this SIBO, or that might have resulted. I would point out that the small intestine has 70% or possibly more of our immunity. There are patches in the small intestine of the immune system. I would also say we need to also figure out and manage naturally, because healing can occur with foods and nutrition. That's how you build up tissues. Why and what form of inflammation you have. So there's inflammation. There may be some immune glitches. There is some leakiness in your intestinal tract. There has to be, because the overgrowth of bacteria, that those bad bacteria release a bunch of toxins, and those internal toxins called endotoxins, they stress out the bowel and it becomes leaky. And then all these toxins leak out slowly. And then your immune system outside of the gut and in the gut responds. In other words, there is a whole body-wide response, even though most of your symptoms or all of your symptoms are in your gut, but they may not be. So you would have to see an immunologist to manage the immune part of SIBO, who, if you visited, they would say, why are you here? You should be at the gastroenterologist's office. And then if you wanted to manage it as a patient nutritionally, and you went, let's say, to your family practitioner or your PCP, they would say, yeah, no, I can't help you with this. You need to be at, you have to see a dietitian, but you need to go to the gastroenterologist. Now, gastroenterologists have no specialized nutrition training. Many of them that I've experienced don't even use probiotics. To some of you, you're saying now, oh my God, that's so true. How is that possible? Many people have said to me, how come doctors don't have nutrition training? Because they don't. They have roughly 27 to 35 hours on average when you survey schools in the United States and add up their nutrition hours. And it's very, very basic nutrition. So sometimes I will have a new patient that comes to me that doesn't have any experience with natural medicine, but for some reason they maybe a friend said, come on in and just trust them or something. But they don't have the background of relatedness. They cannot get it. No matter what I say, it doesn't really land. So that's why I prefer people who are like-minded, that are already enrolled in the conversation of natural medicine. Why? Not only do they comply better, which gives them better results potentially, but they mobilize their natural innate healing powers because they believe in the thing. If someone comes to me with prostate cancer or obesity or a hormone problem or headaches, whatever, and they do not believe in what I do, it is far less probable that they will respond. Let's talk more about different types of health problems and imagine how a traditional allopathic specialist in that area would approach it, and then how a natural oriented person, I can only really say how I would approach it, because let me clarify something here. When I talk about allopathic physicians, we all know there are many types. When I talk about alternative healthcare providers, there are many, many types. Not only are there many types of allopathic physicians, and not only are there many, many types of naturally oriented practitioners, but among the groups of them, among the chiropractors and the nutritionists and the naturopaths and the acupuncturists and the Reiki mat, whatever, there are many different types among those groups. People practice very, very, very differently. I admit that when I realized that how I practiced and my perspective, when I first realized that this was not how everyone thought, I was absolutely floored. So I made certain assumptions, and we all make assumptions, but I'm recognizing that now, that I am here to develop healing plans for people, not to squeeze them into a structure that one size fits all. So let's talk about examples. Let's talk about something common like fatigue. So if you had fatigue, what might you do? You might go to your general practitioner, your PCP, maybe your family doctor, and you would say, I'm tired. And they would question you about your sleep habits, and they might even mention diet. You know, you're getting enough calories, that sort of thing. They might do some standard blood work, which would consist of a CBC, a complete blood count, and a chemistry of what's called a metabolic panel. And if they're very, very good, they might actually check your thyroid, which we all know is not a very accurate test. Here's my point. If they didn't see anything on the labs and you were tired, they would say, look, I don't see anything here. So, you know, maybe it's stress. So have a nice day. Not meaning to criticize. That's what would happen. Now, if you saw someone like myself, I would say, okay, let me see the labs that your PCP did. Yeah, these look normal. But you know, maybe you need something different than normal, because normal lab results are average. And the average individual your age is not particularly bursting with energy. So for me to compare you to that population doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So besides, you weren't given any practical advice, so let me look at your thyroid results more carefully. Let me look at all of your blood results more carefully. And perhaps if I compare you to healthier populations of people, your so-called normal labs won't look so normal anymore. So for example, as a marathon runner, I don't eat a normal diet. I certainly don't have the same physical limitations that most 51-year-olds might have. Why? Because I treat myself like a much younger individual. I try to get my chemistry in the younger biochemistry so I can do different things, and my healing capacity is different. So I would take that person with fatigue. Sure, I would do their thyroid, but I go further. I would check thyroid antibodies. I might check hormones, because certain hormone imbalances can cause fatigue. Yes, maybe their blood sugar was normal, and if it were low, they might be fatigued, but maybe it's barely normal, and I would look at that distinction. A common mistake that physicians sometimes make, and I know this because I've taught courses on lab to physicians of all types and other types of healthcare providers, is they sometimes, not all the time, they forget to consider the results of a lab test relative to the person's symptoms. they sometimes think if the page doesn't have an abnormality in the high or low column, that it's in the head of the patient. They would say that, and this is an important point, they would think this because they don't have any other tools. They have not learned another way to think about this person. So therefore, they have no answers. And they, as an individual, they just simply think, well, it's not me. And, you know, it's this person's fine. The labs are fine. But I say, look deeper. Look at the hormones. Look at the nervous system. Look at nutritional levels. And as many of you know from listening to my show, Vitamin Lies, and also the Nutritional Interpretation of Blood show, that when regular allopathic physicians look at laboratory work, they do not do a lot of these tests. For your PCP, for example, to do hormone tests that are in any real detail, neurological tests of the strength of your nervous system, maybe it's depleted, maybe your adrenals are depleted, maybe you have an autoimmune disease, maybe you have digestive issues or malabsorption. We've already gotten into about 6 medical specialties, but the structure of how medicine is does not encourage a single practitioner to do that. We all know this. I'm just pointing out something that is just known, that you will be referred from practitioner to practitioner. And the problem with that is oftentimes there is a loss of what's known as continuity of care. The doctors do not talk to one another. And if they do, they simply might argue or stand by their point of view. And why wouldn't they? But if you know better, you can say, let me take all this stuff that I've done from all these practitioners and let me bring it to someone who has an integrated or holistic mindedness. You know, the term holistic mindedness was a breakthrough word for me. I was reading a book. You might want to write this one down. This is a great one. It was written in the 40s and it's called Science and Sanity. Science and Sanity by, I believe the author's name was Jacob Borzybski. And he used the term holistic mindedness way back then, but he did not use it in the sense of being open-minded to all possibilities, like let's say in your personal experience of your body or your life. My interpretation of what he wrote was that he meant a holistic mindedness that applied to the entire universe. And he went on through hundreds of pages to talk about what he called the Einsteinian point of view of the universe, which includes us as individuals. Of course, the book Science and Sanity, by the way, is a book about semantics, to the best that I can interpret it, meaning the meaning of meaning and how words are a structure which not only open up possibility for us. For example, if you do not have the word war, let's say, in your vocabulary, like there's one particular African tribe I read about decades ago. They don't have the word war, so they don't fight. They don't have wars. And if we have a language, let's say, and I've read this as well, it may or may not be true, but it makes sense, that we have more negative words in the English language than positive words, it might predispose us to more negativity. My point is, if we have a holistic language, we have a whole new universe of possibilities. If we just have an allopathic language, we are relegated to that. So when I heard the word holistic mindedness, it really served as a trigger for me to keep an open mind, to not label something as makes sense, doesn't, but to take it in and really look at it and see how I can apply it to an individual. When I first started in practice, I was so confident that I could convert the entire allopathic profession to natural medicine that every opportunity I had, I would write up all my findings and how I helped this or that person with natural approaches, and I would write this letter to their doctors, sometimes more than one doctor. It would be, in those days, you know, I used their actual typewriter, and it was single spaced. I included references. These letters would sometimes take me, I would sometimes spend a few weeks on them because of what it meant to me, the possibility of altering practitioners and how that would permeate to society. And I was baffled that I never got a call back about the letter. there wasn't a reformation on the side of any of these practitioners of you know, how helpful I was. So I recognized that it was very similar to me writing this letter in, let's say, French and giving it to the doctors who spoke Italian. It's possible that there may be a few similar words in there that they might get some sort of orientation of what I was trying to explain or the concepts I was trying to get through to them. But the point here is that we're sometimes speaking a different language among practitioners. So people say, Dr. Wald, well, you know, I would really like you to call my allopathic doctor and explain your findings. And I say to them, after years of having no results doing that, I said, listen, I am here for you. I am happy to take a call from your practitioner, but I want to predict something for you. They're not going to call me. I have never seen, and that's never happened. Maybe once or twice in my 26 years I've gotten a call. It didn't go well. Because unless that other practitioner is open-minded, and I had made sure that I was open-minded to their approach, I even spoke their language, but it didn't seem to work. It can't work unless someone is open to it. So when a patient says to me, Dr. Wald, here's my labs from my other doctor. They didn't find anything. They did every test. They did everything. You can name it. I mean, I have pages and pages. I look at the labs and I say, okay. And I offer up all of these natural possibilities and alternate interpretations of the very same results. They'll say, well, how can this be, Dr. Wald? I mean, you're a nice guy and everything, but, you know, have you ever heard of Dr. So-and-so or Dr. So-and-so? And so trying to impress upon me their status in their profession. In my profession, they may not have that status, and vice versa. But I say to them, look, when the patient says, Dr. Wald, you know, they had nothing to offer. And I say, well, I understand that because they do not have anything to offer. If they did, they would have offered it to you. But I have a different perspective, so I have different tools, nutrition, diet, food timing, stress reduction, exercise, tens of thousands of natural elements and compounds in nutritional supplements and combinations of that. And I can base it on your findings. Plus, your doctors didn't do any nutritional tests. They'll say, oh, no, Dr. Wald, they measured vitamin levels here. I said, well, they have some use, but you know, a serum or plasma vitamin level is only the last 2 or 3 days. So that's not the right test. Or they'll say, oh, Dr. Wald, no, my B12 level is very high. My doctor said, stop taking B12. I said, well, your B12 level is high because it's a plasma test. But your cells, your red blood cells are very large, which implies there's a deficiency of B12 in your cells because the B12 is not getting in the cell membrane. So it's high in the plasma. So your doctor misinterpreted the test. And that's why you have neuropathy. That's why you have migraines. So can you see how this perspective, it's just very hard to translate. It comes down to what you are open to. How about memory loss? If you have memory loss, you go to your primary doctor, you complain of memory loss. And let's say that doctor, that allopathic doctor, is astute enough to say, yes, there's some memory loss. I've done a mini mental exam with you and you failed it. So I'm going to refer you to a neurologist because they study the brain. Now, one of my best friends is a neurologist, and he freely admits that the medications for memory issues and early dementia and well-established dementia, they do not work. They're a failure, but they're still given. Why? I asked him, why? And my friend, the neurologist, would say, well, that's what we have. I once asked an oncologist a similar question. How come statistically, if chemotherapy by and large for most cancers, 800 plus different cancers we've established, does not work statistically, why use it? And he says, well, that's what we have. So this is a matter of perspective. So imagine in front of you, you are the person that has a memory loss. You feel that you just don't have a recent memory recall, or maybe it's distant memories or a combination of both. You have a family history maybe of dementia or Alzheimer's disease, or you're just concerned about it because something like 40% of those over age 60 will experience clinical dementia or Alzheimer's disease. It's staggering. It's a staggering epidemic. There's nothing in medicine. There was an article in the New York Times a couple years back, maybe three, possibly four. Time flies. I remember the article very well, which They looked at omega-3 fats for the the treatment of dementias. And the article, in my opinion, correctly concluded that omega-3s do not help. However, hang with me, folks. But there are many studies, very well-controlled studies, even double-blind placebo-controlled studies, which are the gold standard of medicine, that have shown that omega-3 fats are very, very good preventative agents for dementia and Alzheimer's and other types of memory loss. I responded to the New York Times article and posted these links to this proof. You know, I didn't have doctors from all over the world calling me. You know, the point is, we have to be very careful what we hear and what we are reading, and then is it a correct study? So how would I evaluate someone with memory loss? Well, of course I would do many memory exams and question them, of course. But my approach, being of holistic-mindedness orientation, is I would fix anything I sort of find on my various tests. I would do tests of the nervous system. I would check the autonomic nervous system. I certainly would check tests of absorption. What does absorption have to do with memory? Well, if you malabsorb proteins, you will not have enough amino acids, which compose the proteins, to make the neurotransmitters in your brain, which serve as the chemicals which jump from brain cell to brain cell, from neuron to neuron, to have a thought, feeling, emotion, or a memory. How about if you don't have enough fat-digesting enzymes? If you have a deficiency of fat-digesting enzymes, or you have enough, but you don't have enough to prevent some genetic predisposition or some environmentally precipitated loss of memory, you can have a perfect diet. It doesn't matter what your diet is, whatever a perfect diet is. But you would need to know to take lipase enzyme, which is a fat-digesting enzyme, so you absorb your omega-3 fats better. And not just that, your fat-soluble nutrients require lipase, a fat-digesting enzyme, vitamin D, A, E, K, CoQ10, lipoic acid, melatonin. So a neurologist does not do tests of absorption. They do know a little nutrition. They know about B12 and folic acid and how those nutrients can be associated with neuropathies. And even some know that it's associated with memory loss. But I promise you, if you go to PubMed.com, PublishedMedicalArticles.com, which is the National Library of Medicine, I've said this in other shows, that there are over 3 million scientific citations. And you can look it up. You can put in omega-3 fats and dementia prevention, or you can look up B vitamin insufficiency or malabsorption and memory loss. And you will find more articles than you probably could actually read in your lifetime. So when a patient says to me, yeah, no, my doctor says there's just, my allopathic doctor says there's no evidence for anything you're talking about. And some people get upset with me. I said, well, as they're speaking to me, I'm on my laptop and I'm on the National Library of Medicine. I've called up maybe 700 articles in front of me without exaggeration sometimes, depending on the topic. And I turn my computer around, I'm like, well, there you go. And they just look at me, baffled. And then I'll say, why doesn't my doctor know this? Well, I said, this is not what he or she is interested in. Of course they want to help you. They're very bright. They care for you. There's no doubt in my mind that that is true. I mean, I'm sure there are exceptions, but unless you have an interest, why would you look into a thing? If someone says to me, Dr. Wald, you know, what do you think about homeopathy? I tell them my truth. I say, listen, I do know about the theory of homeopathy. I can tell you about Dr. Hahnemann and potentiation and how like cures like, and I can go on and on. Except I do not feel that I am the best practitioner for homeopathy. So I say to them, well, you would want to talk to someone else about that. I don't say, oh, that's nonsense. It may or may not work for that person. Every treatment has a potential to work to different extents, depending on the person's acceptance of it. And sometimes it doesn't matter what you think about it. It's going to have an effect on you. I don't care what you think about prednisone. If you take enough of it, it's going to affect you. I don't care what you think about chemo. If you say, no, that's not going to hurt me, and you take enough of it, it's going to hurt you. Also the same with nutrients. If you take too many fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, E, K, for example, I don't care if you think you're doing all the detox in the world. If you take too much, you're going to become toxic. You might get a hepatitis of the liver from fat-soluble vitamin overload. My point is, there are there are certain things that the mind can manage, and there are certain things that the physical body will just succumb to, either in a positive way or a negative way. Now here's, I just want to briefly mention something else that occurred to me one day, I think maybe a few years out of chiropractic school. I just realized in a flash, this was just something that I felt was true at the time. I really thought, I went from thinking that I had the right perspective, I could help all these people, and I thought about things the right way. And then I spoke to an acupuncturist that explained to me about energy systems and that. And I said, wow, I mean, yeah, I knew that, but this is more to this. And then they would say to me, and I'm, of course, just speaking about one particular experience I had. They'll say, you know, Michael, they'll say, you know, we're energy. There's nothing physical. Everything's energy. So we use acupuncture to harness that energy and to help correct distorted energies that run through, you know, meridians. And that's how we improve health. And of course, there are other reasons and interpretations, but that's just one possible one. And then I thought, wow, that makes a lot of sense. That's a perspective. And then I realized, wow, there are a lot of different perspectives. And there is, it's not fair to say there's a holistic perspective, because if there is someone who's a strong energy believer, in my mind, they might be closing off other possibilities because they are, in my opinion, possibly misinterpreting everything as energy. Well, of course, everything is energy. We don't need the quantum physicist to finally get that and explain to us that everything that seems physical is made of molecules, and those molecules are made of electrons, and then there are subatomic particles even beyond that. And when you break it all down, and you break it all down, and you break it all down, there's just empty space. I get that. But there's also this world that we tend to believe in and our minds make real, we call the physical reality. And if I hit you over the head with a baseball bat, I doubt it's going to go through you because you're energy. So my point is, I believe it is an artificial and harmful distinction. I'll say it again. I believe it is a harmful and artificial distinction to take one side. Oh, we're energy, or we are physical, or we're a combination, which that's one practical approach. But whatever choice we make, it tends to determine how we approach our health. The point of this, again, this conversation, it's all about health confidence. Whatever, to explore your beliefs about things is extremely important, to be open-minded, obviously, to things, whether it's allopathic concepts or this artificial separation that I'm proposing on the show of allopathic versus natural. I do not view things in those distinctions. I only do when I'm having a conversation with someone and I say, as I've said in early in the show, I'm going to give you, if someone says, well, why do you think this finding is this, or why do I feel this way? And I'll say, I'm going to give you two answers. Here's what an allopathic physician might tell you. And now here's what I would tell you. But I get both parts. Here's a practical application of this, using the best of both. I do blood work. I'm known as a blood detective. That's my branding. That's my badge of honor, so to speak. When I think of the term blood detective, I am motivated by that. I want to detect. I want to find. I want to not stop until I help someone. I might do blood work. That's done in allopathic medicine. Virtually every doctor is aware of or does blood work. But just like a painting, where you can look at it and say, think of your favorite painting right now or picture. And it's your favorite because there's something about it that you like. It reminds you of something, makes you feel a thing, whatever the reason. Someone else comes along and says, oh, that's the ugliest thing I've ever seen. I have a painting like this in my office. I think it's beautiful. But half the people love it. And the other half of the people say, would you mind burning that now before we continue this conversation? So with blood work, I look at the blood like I look at a painting. And I take different perspectives on it. I say, okay, here's what your doctor should have told you the meaning of this is. And often I mention things and the person says, that wasn't told to me. And they say, why is that? How can you be seeing this? I said, well, you see that high and low? It's abnormal. They'll say, yeah, but they didn't tell me that. I said, well, this abnormal plus that abnormal plus that abnormal doesn't add up to a disease category. I don't say this necessarily every time, but you know, diagnoses, they're made up. They're to help us figure out something. So we have some sort of approach. That's how we're trained in medicine. And then I say, but you don't feel well. So just because you don't have a diagnosis, a formal diagnosis, we're going to fix everything we find. We're going to try that. And we're going to do it as naturally as possible. So if your cholesterol is elevated, that usually means you need some niacin. You might need some more fiber, higher vegetable intake in your diet. Maybe we'll use red rice yeast or CoQ10 or vitamin E, whatever. Most of you know about these things. But what if there are 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 pieces of lab work? Well, all that different nutrition comes together for that person because it's not different. It's the person. So I made a technology. I used science and I made a software program. I can put all the results of the lab in. I call it Blood Detective, and then it spits out some interpretation for me. And everything I've ever learned that I thought was important in the area of nutrition and health, I've plugged into this computer system. So it spits out a report that even on the worst day, I'm pretty well oriented about issues that might reveal things given this different perspective using technology and using some tools of standard medicine, meaning blood work, that help the patient. Then my report gets spit out of the printer, and then I superimpose those findings and those interpretations coming from regular medicine and alternative medicine and nutrition and biochemistry with the conversation, with the patient's health goals, with your health goals, with your genetics, with your daily habits. Can you see what I'm talking about? More possibility comes out of greater perspectives, which has given me a large amount of confidence that at least I can be responsible. I may not have all the answers, because there may not be answers. We may have to invent them. They're not out there. We have to create them. So no matter the problem, whether it's cancer or pain or neurologic disease or cardiovascular disease, if you do not find answers in allopathic medicine, or if you do not find answers in alternative healthcare, then you might want to think of other perspectives. However, something I cannot help but to mention now, before we end very soon, is I have seen people who have tried, let's say, cleaning up their diets, and they've done a nice job, and they still have their health problems. It's been a week, 2 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, 6 months. But given the length of time, the chronicity of the problem, sometimes people have very unrealistic expectations of what should happen when. And then they just drop something and they give up on it. It's not just true in natural medicine, and I see this all the time. I have people coming in, taking a bag of supplements. They look right. They're juicing. They're doing all this, doing yoga, breathing, what have you. And they may not get their results. And then I'll look at their labs and I'll talk to them and I'll do my holistic-minded thing. And all of a sudden, they can get better. Now, it doesn't always happen that way. And the reverse may happen too. I've seen people who've done years and years, as I just said, of naturally oriented things. And then really all they needed was, let's say, a simple procedure. Or they needed a low dose of a medication that just made their migraines go away. My point is, open-mindedness. My job is to give as many possibilities as possible so people are well-informed so they can develop health confidence. Now, possibly compared to some of my other shows, you might consider this show a little bit more esoteric, but it is fundamental. Your mental orientations are your filter for what's in front of you. And sometimes you alter that mental orientation and light bulbs go off. That's what I want to help people with. My next show, I'm going to call Reversing Aging. Now, for any people out there working for the FDA who are saying, he's claiming to reverse aging. I'm not claiming to reverse aging. I'm just claiming to potentially help people reverse biological aging. There is chronological age and there is biological age. And I've talked about this on an anti-aging longevity show, which you might want to listen to in the archives of PRN. For those of you who have other show topics, email me at info@blooddetective.com or go to my site at www.integratednutritionny.com and post your questions on the blog. For those of you who want to see me so I can help you get healthy, maintain your health, whatever your health goals are, feel free to call my office at 914-242-8844. So again, I hope you tune in next time for Reversing Aging. This is the stuff that I use. Now, why don't you take a look at how I practice what I preach on my contact link on my website at www.integratednutritionny.com, and you will see what a 51-year-old could look like and feel like. And let's talk it up. I'll see you next time on Ask the Blood Detective. Thank you so much for tuning in.
Come out, Virginia, don't let me wait. You Catholic girls start much too late. All the sooner or later it comes down to fate. I might as well be the one. Well, they showed you a statue, told